Greetings, the automatically deleted husband, automatically deleted again. As so common, I got a postcard. To George Kozlowski, what will it be like when you see all the postcards that were illegally censored from you? Like you wrote, I wish we were family again. Love, Dad. This was back in December. So, yet another. But be of good cheer. More out to him, including today. Also, yesterday, my dad turned 103. Haven't seen him in a while. But what I did is I have on the website some links to, well, four pictures. One of my dad in 1993, my wife, my eldest daughter, Erica Lee, Jack, who was an infant, and myself flew out to see my mom and dad. At the time, they were living in Las Vegas, Nevada. They had the opportunity to see Jack for the first and only time. And so there's the photo of my dad, myself, and Jack. At the time, they were known as John Sr., John Jr., me, and John the Third, Jack. Jack has decided to forego the name John. But that's what you saw there, the three Johns. I give you three other pictures. To one of my dad, it's Kozlowski Connects. This is 1969. What happened in 1969? Let me think. Oh, yeah. My favorite lady was born. I give you this picture as just so, especially my kids can have an idea of their other grandfather, the one they haven't met. Erica Lee has, but obviously Jack wouldn't remember. But go one step further. my dad's mom and dad. So I have pictures of them. And, you know, so this is around 1930. And, you know, during the time the camera technology would be that you would have to sit still, don't move. And so people look stiff as can be. You know, it was a very new thing. But the reason that so many people look stiff wasn't because people were stiff at that time, but because, well, one, part of it was new, but two, it was understood. Because, you know, when film cameras were the norm, you'd push the button and there would be the shutter that would very quickly open and then close to block the light from outside going through the lens to the film. So it opened it, exposed the film, and shut it. Back then, the shutter was somebody would actually physically pick up a board, leave it open for a moment, and then close it. Often what you'll find, you can frequently see this like in a movie or a newsreel, what they would do is they would have a flash. And the flash was done, they would have a board kind of L-shaped. They'd put some powder on there, and they would light it aflame, and it would quickly give a really bright flash. So you'd open the shutter, do the flash, close the shutter. So during that time, you don't move. Which, you know, again, this is to me, fascinating, because it worked. I mean, here are the pictures. It worked. I found it fascinating. And I've got to add, because I have the picture, and maybe we'll see if I can get it connected. The picture of a gentleman, I think he was in Russia. He might have been Poland. I think he was actually in Russia. It's the first known, I think, color photo. Because back then, you know, you had the color filters, red, green, blue, or with film, it's, you know, you'll see the term CYMK, cyan, magenta, yellow, and black. And those are the four colors used in printing. So they use some kind of filter like that. And of course, because they actually switched the filter. So what happened was he took three photographs in a row. They didn't do blank at the time, I'm pretty sure. But three photographs in a row and switched the color filter so that, you know, the frame would go up and down and so forth. So anyway, and what you can do, because there's the gentleman is sitting at a river, and you can look at the water. And he looks stable because, you know, he just sat there while all this happened, whereas the water was flowing. So you anyway, it's just, to me, I find this fascinating. It's fascinating. Sorry, you know, anyway. Because of the fact I'm focusing on George, and you know, the timing of getting a card from George is, well, unfortunate. There's a series of videos that I did for George last year in 2020 in reference to the, you know, he sent the letter, the email with the, "I wish we were family again" line in it. And I responded and responded and responded and responded. And I actually went through the list, the 2020 list of videos. And I've linked here three primary ones. If you go to one, you can get them all. But some of them are provocative and I think very informative. One is the marriage begins with sex, ends with death, or the Pope. This was at the time when the Pope, you know, Pope Francis, or as he's known, Pope Frankie, opened the door to the homosexual community, opened it wide. And so there was some discussion of that and so forth. There's another one, video for, email to you, John Jones and George Sayor. This is, when I sent, anyway, it was provocative, and also one, a frank talk about Zionism. And, you know, especially I listened to that one, it's kind of like, oh yeah, I remember that. Oh yeah, do I remember that? And, you know, I suggest it is, worth looking at. But one of the things it was a reminder of, the one, marriage begins with sex and ends with death. I quoted in there, because I talked about a discussion I had with my friend Chris. Again, this is October 22nd of 2020. And one of the things we read was Haggai. We actually read the entire book. We went through it and reviewed it. I didn't, we obviously did it over a long dialogue. But we reviewed it. But one particular verse just stood out, because we read it and it says, okay, there's the kind of the impression that you hear, the Sunday school or the Sunday morning type version, but what does it really say? And we looked into it, checked into it, and it's like, oh, that's what it says. Haggai 2:7, "And I will shake the nations so that the treasures of all the nations shall come in. I will fill this house with glory, says the Lord of hosts." And I've heard that talked about. Not much, but usually the idea is bring all the stuff in so we have the fancy stuff in the house, in the Lord's house. That's not what this says. Unambiguously, not what it says. All the nations in the Tanakh, all the Goy, you know, this is the non-Jew. In the Septuagint, all the ethnos, you know, so very similar in meaning, but, you know, the ethnos is, you know, a group of people defined by a particular set of characteristics. All of them. So basically it's saying everyone. But what everyone? So that the treasures of all the nations shall come in. But, you know, this is the ESV, and you say, okay, the treasures of the nation, the stuff, right? What all these people have, right? All their stuff will come in. No. It's chemda in the Hebrew, but in the Greek, it's very clear. It's the ekletos, the elect. So what's happening is I will shake the nations. I will shake the people so that the elect of all the people shall come in, and I will fill this house with glory, says the Lord of hosts. That's not kind of what it implies. That's exactly what it says. It's exactly what it says. And to see that, it's kind of like, oh, wow. Because what's valuable is not stuff. The most precious thing in God's creation is the pinnacle of his creation, his elect. And he fills his house with his elect. And that gives him the glory. Because his elect are not people that came to him because of their wisdom, but because he called them. It's his doing alone. It's really, really fantastic. Anyway, one other thing. You may recall I had a dialogue with Chris a couple weeks ago, I think. It wasn't the most recent. It was some time back because I went reviewed some of the stuff with him. And his comment was because of the way I said things with passion, I'm the one to explain Shofar Nexus and the related projects. Well, you know, I've sent emails out to a variety of groups and so forth, and it hasn't worked. It's basically been silence for months. So I said, you know, it's been on my mind. You know, I want to do my bulk email, but I have a couple issues. One is I need to have days when I think straight, and there have been issues that I'm just simply not thinking straight. Today was one of them. You know, because I need to be able to concentrate. And I do find I have to pick up a stride. You know, it's like when I walk out the door to take a walk. Those first few steps are pretty pathetic. By the time I get down the driveway, I'm okay. By the time I get, you know, a tenth of a mile into it, things are warming up. By the time I'm a quarter mile into it, I'm doing great. By the time I'm a mile into it, I have my pace. It is the same way when I write the software. It's not that, you know, I can turn the corner in 5 minutes. It takes sometimes days. But when you lose the stride, it's a problem. But, you know, there's various things. And, you know, I've had the various projects. You know, probably the lowest priority is the His Wages thing because, you know, that's just obedience to Christ. Who cares about that? You know, Leviticus 19, that's so Old Testament. Some of the other things, the Shofar portfolio, which is, you know, turning this privacy into the hands of the consumer, that's a revenue producer. But it takes some a lot more mechanics to get that in place. I need some actual testing and bouncing off ideas and so forth, and that hasn't occurred. Shofar Nexus underlying technology is basically, I mean, it's been used for years. There are a few issues to refine, and there are some issues that I simply turned off because I said, okay, I need to make this better, and I'm going to change some other things, so I'm going to turn this off. A fundamental part of that is security aspects, because I want to get the underlying stuff done right so I can put the other stuff on top that's superb. So that has to get done. But then what project drives this? And, you know, why am I in this situation in the first place? Well, that's a clear way to see it. Being a whistleblower. You know, that's the fundamental thing. And I've learned a lot about that, including the idea of how to, or the need to. How to is still a problem. The need to reconcile, to protect the whistleblower at the time, but then to find ways to allow for reconciliation. That's an immensely big deal. So those are the desires. But then, of course, what does it apply to? You know, I use the example of collateral pipeline, which is obviously a play on the idea of collateral murder. But that's the big stuff. That's the, you know, the world stage stuff. And, you know, because I think the way to look at it is collateral murder was embarrassing, but only a few people died, and it wasn't the thing that caused everybody to take attention. It wasn't a 9/11 thing. Excuse me. Pardon me. It wasn't, you know, whereas Nord Stream sabotage is something, you know, I've described it as 9/11 without the pyrotechnics. Because, yes, it was a big explosion, but it was underwater, so it wasn't seen or heard by most. Definitely measured on the earthquake measuring things. Oh, what are those things called? Oh, gee, Richter. Well, it's the Richter scale. It's the, anyway, those things that measure earthquakes. Wow. I'm not a geologist, nor do I play one on TV. I used that joke in one of the videos. if somebody were to come forth with that, the analogy I would have is Private Manning, who exposed collateral murder, ended up in prison and so forth and mistreated and all those kind of things. Whereas the gentleman who potentially was the leaker for the Hillary Clinton emails is a gentleman by name of Seth Rich, who's rather dead. And so the question is, was it a death of convenience? You know, just a remarkably well-timed late night robbery, or was it an assassination? You know, so that is one of those things that I think we'll just, nobody wants to check. Well, nobody with the authority to check wants to check. So my assumption is, if there's somebody who says, yes, I have the information and I can expose collateral pipeline, that person won't, if that person is caught, it won't be like Private Manning. It'll be more like Seth Rich. That person's dead. No ifs, ands, or buts. That person will be dead. There's too much at stake here. So the protection necessary for that kind of person is a really big deal. I mean, because this is life or death. So, but that's the big stuff. My real concern, because, you know, again, I look at myself as someone who exposed small stuff and still paid a price. Relatively small stuff. And I didn't know what I was doing. I made a whole bunch of mistakes, a lot of mistakes, and a lot of it wasn't clear for literally for years. So one thing is I'd like to be able to express that to somebody who may get into a situation. Because one of the things I heard somebody say, and I don't remember where it was said, but I heard it and I wrote it down, the idea of confusing vengeance with justice. A lot of times a whistleblower may be motivated by vengeance as opposed to, I want to do the right thing. And so, you know, it's that may be in the mind and whatnot. So besides protecting the whistleblower from the ramifications of what he's doing, there needs to be a way to inform the whistleblower that of other factors. And obviously I wanted to do factors from the mindset of a follower of Christ. So that is another aspect of this. And of course, also put on the table the common characteristic I see in whistleblowers is before, during, or after they make stupid mistakes, you know, guilty. And to be aware of that and be forewarned of that, and it may help somebody. And then, of course, the idea, okay, you if you become a whistleblower, especially if you're, you know, become public and people know, how do you reconcile relationships? I think that is extremely vital. So how do you get this information out to somebody? And then one step further, the idea of I want to provide the tools for somebody to be the whistleblower, but not give them an organization. So, you know, I did the Shofar Leaks project. It was kind of a, you know, effectively an organization idea initially. And now it's different. Shofar Leaks is the website. I'll put the information there. But it'll also be somewhere else. The documentation, you know, I may put, you know, like a video about this, that, or the other on Shofar Leaks. But the actual documentation, how to do, what to do, where are the tools, that will be embedded in Shofar Nexus always in every copy that goes out. So it's not something that you have to go, oh, have I heard about this? If you have Shofar Nexus, you've got the documentation, you have the know-how, or it's there in front of you. And you don't have to go look for it, and therefore nothing will be traced for you looking for it if you do it on especially a Shofar book, which, you know, another. But, you know, as I look into where that marketplace would be, obviously the collateral pipeline is, you know, again, the big stage. There's numerous other stages. And of course, one of the things you find a lot of is, you know, as the pro-life activists, I also, you know, it seemed to be, I started with pro-life, and then in pro-life ministry, I started getting connections here and there with the black-white thing. And that became kind of a secondary thing that, you know, activity, you know, went up and down and so forth. And, you know, I've, you know, even done some videos on that. You know, the Black Families Matter is, you know, that's me. But then the other area, which has been very related, and again, I've done some videos on this, especially the ones, seriously, go buy a slave, the ones in slavery. And the more I think of it, and the fact that, you know, the my one official thus far, you know, athletic event that I entered and got my medal for that I sent to Susanna that I assume she does not have, like George doesn't have his cards, was for Willow Bend Farms, a ministry to the slave, the sex slave. And I talk with this other organization, Her Song, a ministry to a sex slave. The important thing about that is I wrote a script, you know, because it's the line I use a lot now. It's not the things that are over there, it's down the street. That's what makes that important. The cocoa slave, you know, that I mentioned. Well, I can do something about it. I do something about it. I've been doing something about it for years. I don't buy cocoa from companies that either the cocoa itself or other products that company does, specifically Nestle and Mars, which is right here in town. I don't buy their products. I don't knowingly buy their products, you know, because these are the parent companies that owns a whole lot of other things. So that, you know, it may be, for example, my broken comb or whatever was another company they own and that I don't know about. But I think in the case, most of these companies, it's always food, typically junk food or mass factory food. So I wrote the text, and it's 4 pages long. The working title right now is Modern Day Slavery. From cocoa to sex, offering a fighting chance for some. Because that's basically the theme I've been working on for a long time. I started this morning writing some software, and I said, okay, I got to do this. I don't want to do this. I got to do this. I spent hours and hours on it. And there's a problem. You know, as I say, when I sometimes write sitting down, sometimes I write standing up. But then when I read it out loud, standing up. And I've done that like at least 4 times already. Find grammar errors, find ways, well, that sentence, because I can't read it, you know, stumble over the reading it, so I can say, okay, well, I change it so it reads better. You know, and I did a lot of that. But the other problem is, because my intention is to read it on video, and then put it on BitChute, Brighteon, YouTube, and whatnot. Because, especially BitChute, I would not be surprised that in the first week I'll get at least 200 views. But I will also promote it. I've never promoted it before, and I'm going to promote this one somehow. In doing so, maybe I'll do better. And I'm specifically asking for help in the sense of connecting with people. But in my process of reading it, again, I've done it at least 4 times. Not once have I been able to read it through without breaking into tears. And it troubled me. I was hoping to get it done and recorded today. Not a chance. Not a chance. You know, I send a copy to Chris. Last two paragraphs. My name is John Kozlowski. My email is john@kozlowski.org. I am politically incorrect. I am a follower of the Lord Jesus Christ. I will not give up until I am stopped. Contact me. This may help only a few, or maybe only one. What if that is your daughter? My lady, my wife, I have five daughters, and so do you. I love you, and I want you back.